But right now, we welcome to the program South Carolina ER Dr. Robert Leslie. Hi there.
Well, hello, Debbie.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You betcha. And you've written a book called Angels in the ER, Inspiring True Stories from an Emergency Room Doctor. So I take it that you believe angels really do exist, right?
I certainly do.
Okay, because, I mean, this is always a question that, you know, some people, like, I don't know, I've never seen an angel. Do they really exist? Do they fly around? Do they have wings? Do, you know, what do they look like? So we're going to delve into some of your experiences in the emergency room, and your book is just full of all sorts of things. But let's just start at one of the first stories. You have a story called The Least of These. What is that particular story about?
I think The Least of These, I believe, is that the one about, I think that's the...
Slim, the guy named Slim.
Slim, who comes in, he's one of our ER regulars, meaning that he comes into the emergency room on a regular basis. And he really has no, he's a homeless person, and he has no other place to go for his health care. And Slim would come in and see us frequently for a meal. He was lonely. We understood that, and he would come in with some kind of physical ailment, usually abdominal pain, and usually once we fed him, his pain would go away, and he would be fine. But he was an interesting fellow. He'd had a hard life, and I'd gotten to know him over the course of maybe 15 years. And in this particular story in the book, I think I used it to illustrate one of the angels I think that I have worked with, and that is one of our nurses who really went beyond the call of duty in taking care of this man in circumstances that that were really challenging. He had, you know, he was, again, he was homeless, and in this particular case, Slim had lost control of his bodily functions, and this particular nurse, as I passed the doorway after taking care of Slim, she was just very, just typified the servant's role and the servant's mentality. She was not bothered to do this, and that was not lost upon Slim, and it was not lost upon me. So this particular nurse, in this particular instance, to me, is one of the angels that I have seen. Now, she doesn't have wings and doesn't have a halo and doesn't fly around the department, but nonetheless, she is a servant and she is an angel.
So when you talk about angels, do you believe then that in a sense, those of us who are just willing to serve others and love others and help others are in a sense angels, or do you believe that there are actual heavenly beings that come down from heaven on God's, you know, orders and assume a human body and are angels? I mean, how would you define an angel?
Well, I think first, you know, the writer of Hebrews tells us to be careful how we treat people because they may in fact be angels among us. So I think Scripture sort of points to that. I think that the people that God works through people. He works through, if we allow him to, he works through us. And I think he works through people in different circumstances. So in that light, Debbie, I think that indeed those people are angels. They're performing deeds and helping people in a truly caring and compassionate way. But yes, I believe that there are things beyond our understanding and that there are factors and spirits and forces beyond our understanding that are out there that surround us and then indeed help us. And I have experienced some of that help. And it has been, when it does happen, when you allow yourself to experience it and that you don't blow it off as just coincidence, then it really becomes a meaningful experience.
What is one of those experiences that you've directly had where you know, it did seem like it was a pretty amazing thing and you didn't just blow it off as a coincidence? Can you share one with us?
I can, and it's one of my favorite stories, and it has to do with my my four young children. They're not so young anymore, but when they were 5 and 4 and 3 and 2, about that age, my dachshund, Scooter, was pregnant, and she had never had puppies before, and she went into labor on a Sunday morning. And we had her on the back porch, and my children and my wife had their faces pressed to the French doors that led out onto the porch, and I had Scooter on a towel about 2 feet away from them. And she had a first puppy, and it was stillborn. And I looked up, and the kids didn't exactly know what was going on. My wife knew. I called the vet, and he said, "Don't worry, dachshunds lose a lot of puppies, so don't worry if you have stillborns." Well, I didn't like that answer. So the next puppy was born and did not breathe, and Scooter did what she could, nose, and, you know, sort of stimulating the puppy, and then she lay down. I looked at my kids and said, "This is not going to happen." So I picked up the puppy, pulled the membranes away from his head, sucked out his nose, and started doing CPR.
Wow.
And within just almost no time, the puppy started, you know, took some deep breaths, looked around, and was great, and did fine. And I looked in the glass there and saw my children's faces, and I will never forget that look. Now, the reason that this was so meaningful to me is 3 days later, in the emergency room late at night, I was on duty, and the ER was empty, and the nurse brought in an Asian girl who could speak no English, and she was in active labor. And the nurse put her on the stretcher and said, "Dr. Lester, come here quick. We don't have time to send her upstairs."
Mm-hmm.
So, indeed, she was in labor, never hollered, never. She just smiled at me and delivered a baby whose membranes were intact. The old term was a veiled infant.
Uh-huh.
But her membranes were completely intact, and the nurse looked and said, "What in the world is that?" And I said, I know exactly what to do. Now, I wasn't going to bite her membranes away. I asked for a scalpel, cut them away, and we resuscitated the baby, and the baby did great. I had never seen that. It's a very rare occurrence. The nurse had never seen it. But that preparation on the
yes.
back porch 3 days earlier,
yeah.
that was not a coincidence, and it prepared me for what was going to happen a few days later.
Wow. That's one of those things, I call it a God sighting, where it's not just a coincidence. God was intervening, and in that case, preparing you for what was going to come a couple of days later.
There's no question, Debbie.
Interesting. In your book, you have a story called "It Must Have Been a Miracle." Can you tell us that particular story?
Yeah, I believe this is a story about the, is this a story of the young girl who came in?
I think it's Samantha Towers or something, yeah. On Christmas Eve.
Right. Ask the question of, you know, do I believe in miracles? And I give the case of, I present the story of this young girl who came in with, abdominal pain and,
right.
and some nausea and things like that. And I look at it, I think she's 16 years old or so. She's there with the mother, and I'm talking to her, and it becomes pretty clear to me that this girl is pregnant. I'm examining her abdomen, and indeed, she's probably, 24 weeks pregnant or something like that. And I ask her about any sexual activity, and she absolutely denies it. Her mother's the most vehement in denying it. And so I said, "Well, let's just check a few things." And indeed, she does have a positive pregnancy test.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back, and I think, now, this may be a miracle. So I talked to her, and again, she is adamant that she has never been sexually active. Her mother says she is a good girl, and this could never have happened.
And now this is on Christmas Eve, I believe. And that's
right.
What makes this even more bizarre, because, I mean, basically she's saying she's a virgin. It's Christmas
right.
Eve, she's pregnant, and you're thinking, okay, is this the second immaculate
right.
conception?
I looked to make sure her name was not Mary. So it was, which was another tip-off. So I said, "Well, why don't you all talk about it, because this test is pregnant. The pregnancy test is positive,
mm-hmm.
shows that she's pregnant. Y'all talk about it, and then I'll come back." So I went away, saw a few more people, came back, and now they were dressed and ready to go, and the mother said, "Now we understand now what had happened." And she proceeded to tell me that several months earlier, I think at some family gathering, this is South Carolina, you have to remember that, that they were at a family reunion, and it was a cousin who I think they had some kind of relations, and next thing you know, then she's pregnant. So there went my miracle that night.
Oh, my goodness.
But I have seen, I think in that same chapter, I did witness a miracle to my mind that of it had to do with a son and his mother who had been completely estranged for years, and the father I think is sick, and the family is sort of gathering in the emergency room and because of the father's illness, and the relationship between the mother and the son, again, they hadn't spoken in years. There was a lot of anger there, and there was no relationship. And yet, right before my eyes, that relationship was healed.
Wow!
And that, to my mind, that was a miracle. Mm. That was not going to happen. They had not been able to resolve it. But yet, in that circumstance, I do think that the Lord worked through that, and that relationship was restored. So to me, that was a miracle.
Have you ever, in the emergency room, of course, you're seeing all sorts of horrifying, victims of accidents and all sorts of horrible things. Have you ever felt like you've been a witness to a divine healing where you just saw, a miracle of healing before your very eyes? Because, sometimes we hear these stories, but often we don't get to verify it through a physician. We just hear about someone who says, well, I used to have cancer, but I've been back to the doctor and they can't find any trace of it. But it's so, we all are always missing the piece of verifying it through a physician. So now that we've got you on the phone here, have you ever seen an outright miracle in the emergency room?
Debbie, I have not, and I am open to that, but I'm also, I'm a physician, I'm a scientist, and we have seen some miraculous things happen, but not in the sense of, I've never seen a person who came in with a brain tumor, and there it is on the CT scan, clearly there, and then he comes back a week later, and it has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that, and I have been asked, does it weaken my faith? And I can remember there was a missionary to Pakistan who was a member of our church where I was growing up, and he came back from Pakistan with bad headaches, and he had a brain tumor, and he did not survive that brain tumor. And I can remember I was 15 years old, and I would go to church with my father on some Wednesday nights for the prayer meetings, and these godly people, 100 of them, would pray incessantly for Frank. And he died. And it bothered me, and I remember talking to my father about that and asking him how could that happen? How could these people pray so hard for a man who was a godly man and was performing, he was God's hands and feet in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And Daddy, told me, that there's no uplifting answer for that. But he reassured me and convinced me that indeed God works through all these things. He works through all of these experiences and the things that we suffer, and some good will come out of it. But we can't understand all of these things. But now, when I look at what we do in medicine, when I look at people doing stents for heart disease and some of the chemotherapy for cancers that do heal people, those are really miraculous tools that God has placed in our hands to do some things that only a decade or two ago were impossible.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Well, I wanted to ask you a question because I've been following some stories recently, and since, again, I have a doctor on the phone, it's so convenient, but I've been following recently a bunch of stories that are really starting to look at ethical questions with medicine. or just, I don't know, spiritual questions for that matter, about, you know, how long do we want to prolong life? And I'm sure this is something that's probably occurred to you as a doctor and as a person of faith. You know, as medical science progresses, we can prolong life more and more, you know, longer and longer, right? Because, you know, you can do chemotherapy on a 98-year-old person, and maybe you can prolong their life for another 5 years or whatever. Have you had to kind of wrestle around with how far we should take medical science? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and that's an interesting question. My best friend is a pediatrician, mm-hmm. and he has completed training as a medical ethicist.
Oh.
And he is a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and it's very important. He's wrestling with these issues,
yeah.
and there are organizations in our state and medical societies that deal with these issues. And it's, you know, and it's very important to have a Christian and a Christian's perspective presented
mm-hmm.
When you're talking about these issues, because we're talking about genetic engineering.
Yeah.
The list just goes on and on. And so it does impact you know, the decisions that we make. For me, in the emergency room, I think I presented one of the cases in the book, in the emergency room, that I had to make the decision, when do you stop resuscitation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when do you stop doing CPR?
Mm-hmm.
Do you start CPR? If you have a terminal cancer patient, you know, when do you stop? Those were always issues that that, you know, face us almost every day. But
yeah.
You're absolutely right. Those are questions that we as a people are going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this is where Christians need to be outspoken. Otherwise, the issue will be taken away from us.
And it's a huge question. I mean, we're all very thankful for all the breakthroughs we've had in medicine, where you know, 50 years ago we didn't have chemotherapy, and look what it's done for us, or what I'm using that as just one example. But as we are progressing further and further, you kind of wonder where these boundaries, or should we have any boundaries on what we can do? Like you said, genetic testing. I mean, there have been stories recently about being able to do more and more tests of babies before they're even born, in terms of, you know, what they're going to be like. Will they have any disease propensity or illness, you know, and well, do we want to maybe abort those babies early then? Well, most Christians would probably say no, but where exactly do you draw the line in all this stuff? And I was just curious if you personally have come to any conclusions about how far we should take medical science.
I've wrestled with this, and I don't have any hard answers.
Yeah.
I think that the ability to help people to cure disease, but you're absolutely right when you start making choices about, you know, about children, about genetic, what's acceptable and what's not. And of course, in a very pragmatic way, who gets the next kidney? Who gets the next liver?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are issues that are very hard to answer.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We appreciate it very much. And we'll make some copies of your book available for those who would like to pick up one for free. It's called Angels in the ER, Inspiring True Stories from an Emergency Room Doctor, by Dr. Robert Leslie. And if you'd